You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Rick Franzi.
Welcome to today's episode of Critical Mass Coast to Coast. I am your host, Rick Franzi. I host this business talk show, which airs live on Thursday afternoons at 3 p.m. If you're listening to this show in the future as a podcast, well, then thanks for finding our program, and we hope you enjoy the next 50 minutes of stimulating conversation. We would encourage you, though, to consider listening to this program live during our broadcast time, heard exclusively here on octalkradio.net. I'd like to thank Smart Business Magazine for sponsoring our show today. Smart Business Magazine is a management journal providing insight and advice for top decision makers. To learn more about Smart Business Magazine, visit their website, www.sbnonline.com. Critical Mass Coast to Coast is brought to you through a partnership of Critical Mass for Business with Renaissance Executive Forum's business owners in selected markets across the United States. Executive Forum's is an international organization committed to helping members take their business to the next level. My book, Critical Mass, The 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups, was the first book ever written about the peer group experience and is available for sale on Amazon.com. Simply type in my name, Richard Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I, and you will find all of the books that I've written, but in particular, Critical Mass, The 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups. If you're listening to our show live today here on octalkradio.net, then consider possibly joining in the conversation with one of our two guests. How would you do that, you ask? Very simply, I say, find the community chat room section of octalkradio.net's website, log on with your ID, Twitter ID, post your thoughts, questions, observations, or whatever. Our producer, Paul, will be checking them. He might bring them to my attention, and I may bring them into the conversation today. If we don't feel badly. It's not that we didn't think your input was important. It's just that we had so much other things to get to with our guests, we just weren't able to get to your questions as well. But we do appreciate the interest. As I said, today we have two guests. Our first guest, Don LaFrieda, is president with Dentex Central Incorporated. We're going to be talking about a variety of topics with Don, including the development side of her business, opening new stores, mentoring women, as well as some other conversations that I would like to have. But first, we need to welcome her to the program. So, Don, welcome to Critical Mass Coast to Coast.
Hi, Rick, and thanks for inviting me today. It's a pleasure to be here and chat with you.
I'm glad that Peter Broiler brought you to our attention, and we're able to have you on the Coast to Coast version of our radio programs.
Thank you so much.
Why don't we begin very simply by asking you to explain to our audience what it is that your firm does.
Well, we are a Denny's franchise group, and we own 70 restaurants in the middle of the country, Texas, Kansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Illinois, and we've been doing this since about 1984.
Okay, so you are the first Denny's franchise owner that's graced the airwaves here on Critical Mass Coast to Coast. So I have to back up a little bit and say, how did you start in this area? Tell me the story about how you began to be a Denny's franchise.
Sure, I'd love to. I grew up in Southern California, and, I came from a single-parent home. We didn't have much. So I knew as a kid, ever I wanted to have anything, I was going to need to work for it. So when I was 16 years old, my mom was actually a district manager for Denny's. And when I needed a job, Denny's seemed like the likely place for me to go. So I got a job there. And I started out as a hostess. And I soon learned that, well, by waiting tables, you could get tips and make more money. So I begged and begged to be made a waitress. And finally, they agreed. And I worked there for several years, and in the process of working there, Denny's bought out a chain of restaurants called Colony Kitchen and Hobo Joe's. And there was one restaurant in a little mining town in Globe, Arizona, that they didn't want to keep in the chain. They didn't want to convert it to a Denny's. They wanted to sell it out of the chain. They couldn't get supervision to it. It did very poor sales. It just didn't make sense for them. So a friend of mine who was the manager of that Denny's and myself, we bought that restaurant. We bought it from Denny's, but it wasn't a Denny's. And I was 23 at the time, and neither she nor I had much money, so we signed up for every credit card we could get, went to the bank and said, oh, give me $5,000, give me $5,000. We raised as much money as we could, and we bought that first restaurant. And about 18 months after that, Denny's corporate called up, and they said, well, oil just went bust in West Texas, and we have these four dog stores. Do you want to take a crack at them? We'll make you a good deal. And so we said, sure. We were young and brave and fearless, and made the trip to West Texas and took over those four stores. And I, coming from Southern California, Orange County girl, I really thought every airport was like LAX. And so I was in complete culture shock. And so I got out a map one day, and I said, what is the next biggest city? And it was San Antonio. So I would call Denny's corporate every week, and I would say, please, you have to sell me a restaurant in San Antonio. Every week they would tell me no. Every week I would continue to call back. Finally, after 8 months, they said, okay, we'll sell you a store. So once they did that, they sold me that store. They sold us that store. We started to build a few stores, and then I decided, I really wanted to grow the business. I bought out my business partner. We were having some conflicts, and so we just decided to part ways. I bought her out, and then I just continued to build my company to the 70 restaurants it is today.
That is an interesting story to think back, how you bootstrapped just getting started and how little money you were able to kind of put together to really begin this journey.
Well, you know, when they say ignorance is bliss, it's for a reason. I mean, you know, today I probably might not do that, but, you know, when you're 23, what do you have to lose? I remember being really fearful initially because, you know, there would be a lot of people dependent upon me for a paycheck. And my mom said to me, what's the worst thing that can happen? You start over at 26? And that just made all the sense in the world to me, and I just pressed forward without ever looking back.
There is something to be said for that, starting a business when you're, you know, there's two sides to every coin, but that is one of the opportunities that you have when you start younger. You don't really have a lot of things that you're going to lose if it doesn't work out for you. Of all the business lessons that you've learned during your time leading and growing your business, have you developed a guiding principle that you're using? And if you do, would you share that with our audience, please?
Well, sure. I have definitely my own guiding principle, and really what that is to listen to my heart and my inner voice. A lot of times throughout the years, I got intrigued and romanced by ideas of certain locations or certain, you know, people that I felt would do a good job, or just something I really felt I had to have. I liked that corner, or I liked that community, when inside my gut said, you know, I probably shouldn't do this store. So I learned after I made several mistakes to really always listen to my heart. And if I had an initial gut feeling that said, don't do this, I never do it. So a lot of times I would have an employee say, oh, this store is going to be a great site. I think it's going to do this much volume. And Denny's would say, oh, yeah, this is on an A corner. So I would sometimes allow myself to listen to other voices instead of my own, and I learned shortly after making a few mistakes that I really need to let my inner voice guide me, and it's never let me down. So that's really my key principle about how I decide about, say, restaurant sites, certain business decisions. Of course, I always go out. I do my due diligence. I do the homework beforehand, but there's still an intuition that you get when you've been in this business that you need to learn to follow. And I think that it takes a while to acquire the talent to know that that's what you need to listen to. And sometimes it's fearful to listen to it, but it absolutely works for me 100%. And that's what guides me forward.
And that was my follow-on question, whether it's developing the intuition or it is developing the confidence? Because it sounded to me that maybe in the beginning you had the intuition already, it was innate, but you maybe didn't have the belief system that you should listen to yourself, that maybe others knew more, versus you developed an intuition over time.
Well, you do develop it over time, but I think also, you know, you develop the intuition also as the experience comes. You know, when you're 23 and fearless, you know, remember yourself at 23, you know, you just think you can do everything. And you quickly learn that, you know, there's smart choices you can make. And if you just give yourself a little free mental space to think about it, to do your homework, to weigh all the factors and not let the emotional side of you take charge, you can make the right decision. And that's what I mean by listening to my heart, not listening to the emotional side that says, oh, this makes financial sense, or this corner says everything should be a home run here. I mean, I logically try and put myself in a non-emotional space about it.
Great. We're going to take our first sponsorship break here on Critical Mass Coast to Coast on. When we come back, I've got some other questions that I'd like to ask you. Probably first we'll go into and ask you to talk about a current challenge that's facing the firm and the steps and ideas you have to mitigate that challenge, okay?
Sure, I'd love to chat about it.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, that's what we're going to hear about when we get back. But first, stay tuned for these very interesting words from our sponsors.
Can we talk about your family business? You know, that thing you put your whole life's blood, sweat, and tears into? Well, what happens when you retire or try and pass that business on to your children? At Succession Strategies, we can help you find the answers. We'll guide you through the unsettling process of protecting your family legacy and successfully passing your business on to the next generation, safely and securely, ensuring that it'll both survive and thrive for generations to come. So ask yourself just one question. Can I really afford to wait? Take the first step. Take our complimentary self-assessment at successionstrategies.com. Or call us at 714-560-9022 to set up a free consultation at your convenience. That's succession-strategies.com. Succession-strategies.com. Succession planning for your family's continued success.
Welcome back to Critical Mass Coast to Coast. Okay, Dawn, could you share with us a current challenge facing the firm?
Well, sure. You know, I think there's always challenge in every business all the time. And being a part of a large national franchise brand, there's a lot. There's first off, there's competition. Restaurants, you know, there's restaurants on every corner these days. Back when I first started, we were the only game in town. Now we're sharing a piece of the pie with everybody. There's a rising employee cost. Healthcare is a little uncertain at the moment, and we're also in a time in our economy where a lot of people in our segment are discounting. We're not raising menu prices, and yet we're discounting to drive traffic. So I think there's a lot of challenges today in the food service industry for sure, and I'm sure in most businesses.
You say the competition is keener now than when you started. I'm wondering, are the demographics changing as far as people's eating out? Or what have you seen in your space, in your industry, relative to the recession and how that's affected people's buying patterns?
Well, what I've seen is people are always going to dine out. I don't think they're going to stop dining out. I think what they're going to do is they're going to dine where they feel they get value and where they can afford to go. So, you know, if you were able to eat at a high-end restaurant before, you might now scale down to a casual-themed restaurant. Or, you know, you're going to go to where you can still get a meal out, but you might just not pay as much for it. But I don't think people are ever going to stop dining out, not with the way two people in each household is working and the way we live our lives today. I think dining out is here to stay.
I'm going to go off script just for a moment because I have a question that, if you're comfortable maybe addressing it for our audience, I think it might be informative. And that is, you know, clearly the brand that your clients is, identify you with is a brand that is out of your control. I mean, it's an international or it's a well-known large-scale brand, but the customer experience is totally within your control. Could you share for our audience what that's like, if you have thoughts in that area, and how that's, you know, either been an opportunity or an opportunity and a challenge for you over the years?
Well, first, let me say we are the largest full-service family restaurant in America, and I'm really proud of that and what that brings. So, you know, while being a part of a franchise offers an element of challenges, it also offers an element of comfort. And I love being part of a brand that has done a great job on helping you create a menu that consumers like, that offers value and affordability for everybody, that says you can come as you are, that says we're a comfortable place, that we care about our guests, that we have a clean, safe, healthy environment. I think being part of that national Denny's iconic brand has been really wonderful for me.
I heard an interview on a different radio station, and they were talking about the idea of what consumers are willing to pay for a cup of coffee versus what used to be available and what people used to pay for a cup of coffee in a diner or family, you know, full service family restaurant where, you know, you pay a flat fee and it's free refills. Frankly, I don't know if that's still the business model for a Denny's or not, but it is amazing to me what people have been asked to pay for some previously thought to be just very inexpensive service, like water and coffee. It's a little bit off tangent with what you do, but I would have to imagine in your restaurants people are coming. What's your policy on refills? Not to ask you a specific question, but how do you view that?
You know, it's interesting because of all the things on the menu, for all the years I can ever recall, coffee is the most sensitive issue out there. It is just amazing the attention people pay to coffee prices. And if it's a nickel cheaper down the street, you're going to hear about it. They don't necessarily ask about refills if they get them in a Denny's. What more and more people are doing is asking for to-go cups, wanting to share, not necessarily asking a question, but wanting to be sure that it's portable and they can take it with them.
Wow.
So they might get a cup of coffee, they might have two or three refills, but then they might ask for a to-go cup to walk out the door with it as well. Same thing with drinks, same thing with pancakes. It's really with everything on the menu. I mean, they want extra butter packets, it's everything. That's just the way it is today when you go into a Denny's, and I'm sure any kind of full-service family-style restaurant. I think it's the consumer being cognizant of what they're spending, what they're getting, what they're wasting. They don't want any waste. So
I've heard from guests across the spectrum of industries that kind of a universal change in clients' attitude is a focus on value.
Yes, I'd agree with you. I think that is a very true statement today in our time.
And we
at Denny's, we recognize that. And I think as a brand, our brand has done a great job coming up with something to make sure that we can offer value for everybody.
We're going to change your focus just a little bit. I'd like you to reflect on a experience, Don, where you learned a really valuable business lesson, but that lesson came by virtue of a challenging or difficult business experience.
Sometimes our biggest mistakes are what really can sometimes make us the most successful. So what I have done in the past when I was fearless and young, I used to believe that I could take any restaurant and turn it around and make it profitable. And I soon learned that there are factors that are not always in my control, like a highway that gets changed, like a demographic area moving, a new power center coming up down the street, a competitor moving in across the street. And so sometimes I just took stores that I probably shouldn't have taken, and it was a mistake, and I've closed 15 restaurants in my career as a result of that. On the flip side of that, when you make mistakes, you learn how to survive through them, and closing a restaurant also makes you learn how you never want to do it again. Of course, I closed 15, but when you have sort of a large fleet like I have, things change over time. You know, what is a very successful restaurant today, 5 years from now, they could build an overpass and you can't even get to it. So some things are out of your control. But there are definitely challenges that have arisen over the years that you have to adjust to and survive through. Did I answer your question?
Yes, you did. And as you're explaining some of the outside risks to the business, threats, if you will, to the business, it's things that maybe people who don't have a brick-and-mortar facility can't appreciate, but you are a little bit constrained by the municipality, by the mm-hmm. City fathers, what they decide to do and redistricting or zoning or whatever it is.
True.
I'm sure there are factors that you have to influence, but you can't decide and control.
That's correct. Absolutely. You know, non-smoking comes in and completely changes your business. I mean, that's something we've been going through for years. So there are clearly things that aren't in our control that present challenges. But I think when you have a good, solid operation and a good team of people and you know your demographic to the best of its ability, you can find ways to conquer the problems. Not always easy. It's painful. It's expensive, but you can fix them.
In the open, I said that in addition to being a successful franchisee of Denny's and entrepreneur, I understand you're serving a million clients a month. Is that true?
In my company, yes. In my individual company, we serve about a million guests a month.
Wow,
it's kind of scary, isn't it?
Well, it's just, it's the cadence of the business. I mean, that just means there's a, that's a lot of activity. That's a lot of feet in the door. And
that's right. And when I say scary, I say it jokingly, because you want to give every guest a great experience. You want them to come into your restaurant, feel like they're home, feel like they can bring their family, sit down, enjoy a meal, and have an enjoyable experience. And so when you're serving a million people, you are just hoping that everything goes perfect every day. And for the most part, I think we do a fantastic job.
Yeah, but even if you're 98% satisfied, that 2%, it becomes the law of the big numbers too, right?
I mean, right.
That's not an insignificant amount of people.
That's correct. But we watch it every single day. We pay very close attention to our guests and their thoughts and what they want, and if they have a complaint, and how we can make things better all the time.
And I do, my sense is, while they don't seem, I think I see a connection between them. I think the rise of social media and people being more connected with Facebook or whatever the particular LinkedIn, whatever the social media tool is, probably mostly Facebook or maybe even Yelp, etc. People are willing now more to give you feedback if you ask them.
Oh, you are so right on with that. I mean, social media is huge. And where, years ago we didn't have the email, the internet, the social media, the things like that. The only real way of communicating was calling our 800 number or sending a letter. Well, now people will just text something, email it, put it on Facebook. Truckers will be on CB and make a comment to other truckers before they hit the next stop. I mean, there's so many ways to communicate. So we always want to do a good job so that people will think of us. And because it's what we're here to do. We get in this business because we want to serve people and offer them a great dining experience. So we certainly want to deliver.
So I said in the open, Dawn, that in addition to being running this successful franchise empire, that you're serving a million customers a month, you also enjoy mentoring other entrepreneurs and women business entrepreneurs, etc. Could you share a little bit about why you do that and what you get from that experience?
Well, sure. Well, first off, my own belief is it's very important to give back. And, I didn't get where I got alone. I mean, there was always somebody along the way that I could talk to and learn from. And so a couple of things that I do is I sit on the Denny's Franchise Association board, where we are a group of individuals that kind of work on behalf of the franchise community to make sure we have a share of voice. And that's a huge time commitment, a lot of travel, a lot of trips, but it's a great thing for the brand and it's a great thing for the franchise community. So that's one thing I do. I am very passionate about youth and making sure that they have a role model that they can look at and think, you know, I can do this. I came from, you know, a poor family life when I was young. And I was asked to speak at a high school recently to kids that were 15, 16, 17 that came from lower income, single parent homes, just a wide variety of problems to help them see that, you know, you can really start with nothing and become something, because I really am living the American dream. It's my story. And it's amazing to me what these children or young adults almost, what their fears are and why they believe they can succeed. And it's not because of them, it's because of their environment. So I spend a lot of time trying to mentor and coach them into programming themselves to realize they can make any goal they set for themselves. And, you know, when I tell them and they know what I came from, they really do get motivated, I believe. I think I've made somewhat of a difference there. So I'm pretty passionate about the youth. And I'm also passionate about, you know, helping women. There's not a lot of women in this business for whatever reason. I'm not sure why. Maybe I'm one of the lucky ones. All the top leaders in my company happen to be female, and I'm very proud of that. They do a great job. They're very hardworking. They've helped me get where I am today. And so I always want to do things to help the women in my community, potential women franchisees, whoever it might be, realize their goals.
How does someone learn more about your store, your story? Where do they find you online?
Well, online, of course, they can Google me. I think my whole life is out there on Google. But they can go to www.denny's.org, which is the Denny's Franchise Association website, which has all of my contact information of how to find me and mission about what we do in Denny's. They could go to the Denny's.com website and find me. They can find me at Denny's corporate headquarters. They can call me on my corporate telephone number. My company's Dentech Central. I am an easy person to find. And I am always happy to speak to anybody, help anybody, answer any questions. I really believe that you do have to give back and you have to share your knowledge, and I love to do that.
And that comes through in how you answer the question. It's transparent that's a part of you that's important, and that's much appreciated, I'm sure, by the greater community in which you're, you know, a member.
May I share one thing that you didn't ask me, but that I think has probably been the biggest lesson in my career? It really is. If I could ever tell anybody, just give them one piece of advice, I would say never be afraid to ask someone for help and never be afraid to take that risk, because there are so many smart people out there who really do want to help you grow, build your business, and help you realize your dream. And I run into a lot of people when I do mentor that say, well, they're just afraid. They didn't know. They wanted to put their head in the sand. They didn't know how to ask for help with a loan, or, you know, how to call their bank because they couldn't make a payment, or how to talk to their franchisor about working with them on a remodel plan. And my advice to just any business listener out there would be, just never be shy about asking for help. Never be too proud. All somebody can say to you is no, but the chance is they're going to want to help you. And I've had a lot of people help me in my career, and I would just welcome helping anybody that would ask me for help.
Really do appreciate you making the time out of what I'm sure is a very hectic and busy schedule to be our guest here on Critical Mass Coast to Coast. Thanks for being a friend of the program, and welcome to the Critical Mass business community.
Well, thank you so much. I enjoyed being here today.
Thank you, Don.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, she was our first guest, and hopefully you found that insightful and an opportunity to have some teachable and learning moments. We're going to take a short sponsorship break, packed full of good information. Don't walk away from your computer. Stay tuned. Listen to the program and our sponsors. And then when we come back, we have the pleasure of having Peter Hosey on. Peter is partner with Jackson & Walker, LLP. We're going to be talking about the power of mentoring, so stay tuned for that.
If you are an Orange County business executive, this message is for you. Do you ever feel isolated with no place to turn for advice or feedback? Who holds you accountable to your commitments in your company? Where do you find the right resources to help you and your company grow? If you have these questions, then Critical Mass for Business might be the answer for you. Critical Mass for Business is committed to helping you make better decisions. These are groups of peers running businesses just like you, providing a great sounding board to test ideas and concepts, review plan and goals, and present issues and opportunities for discussion. The result is improved strategy, accountability, people, and execution skills. If you are interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com and learn more about our executive peer group.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
We have our second guest, and it sounds like he's there. Peter, welcome to Critical Mass Coast to Coast.
Rick, thank you for having me, and good afternoon.
Why don't we begin by asking you very briefly if you could explain to our audience a little bit more about your firm, Jackson Walker.
Yes, we are a firm. Our offices are in Texas, Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, San Antonio, Houston, also San Angelo. Yet we have about 330, 340 lawyers. So we have a national and an international presence. In fact, our slogan is Texas-based global reach. And so what we're able to do is we have a number of clients in each of the cities, certainly a Texas pedigree, but at the same time we represent many of the Fortune 500 companies, six of the Fortune 10 companies and clients nationally and internationally, and are able to provide those same services or superior services as some of our national or international competitors. Precisely today because in the technological age in which we live, we don't necessarily have to be physically located in the same city or geographical area as our clients or our customers. In addition, we were one of the managing or founding firms of Global Law, and so we have affiliations with law firms not only nationally but internationally throughout the world. So that's kind of been our business model and niche, if you will, to provide the best services possible at the highest level while at the same time being competitive and trying to provide our clients with the best value. And to do that, we have stayed here in Texas.
As Peter Borler was briefing me for our interview today, your interview with me here on Critical Mass Coast to Coast, he had mentioned that a philosophy that you have relative to, and I said it in the open, you know, the power of mentoring and bringing good people in, mentoring them, and how that continues and sort of is the lifeblood for the firm. Would you be comfortable for me to ask you just kind of share with the audience your philosophy in this area?
Oh, absolutely. It's been one of the most important aspects of my career, precisely because when I was very young, I was very fortunate to have such mentoring. I have, as I told Peter, I never worry about is the grass greener on the other side of the fence, because I've munched from all the pastures. I got out of law school and went to work for Exxon Company. I came back in Houston, came back here to San Antonio, and was with a small firm. I've been a solo practitioner, a larger, medium-sized firm, and now a national firm. I was very fortunate because I had the mentoring along the way. I had a wonderful law professor at St. Mary's University School of Law, Professor Leopold, with whom I collaborated on on a book, who was wonderful in helping me, Professor Woodward, who was with the University of Texas Law School for many years, retired, and came on with our firm and was absolutely instrumental. And when I was at Exxon, we had a legacy program in which some of the older lawyers from years and years past would come and help us rookies, and it allowed us not only to learn the law, but to learn it in the real world. It's great when you read the books, but you have to learn how it works in real life, and that was certainly helpful. I found the hard way throughout my career in various firms that if you don't refresh the firm with young talent, create a vitality within the firm so that it rejuvenates itself, and it cannot sustain itself. And one of the reasons I was with a very old firm here in town, and one of the reasons many of the partners, myself included, joined Jackson Walker, one of the reasons was that we had failed to do that, and our business model just was not sustainable. And that's why here I make it a point to get involved. I've got three associates that are under my tutelage, whom I mentor. I teach at the law school gratis, trying to give back. I give seminars and on various boards and professional organizations, all with the idea in mind of helping young people, because obviously the strength of any law firm is the strength of its people, and in order to sustain that, you've got to bring in young, vital, intelligent, ethically honest young people.
I completely agree, and it's not just a law firm, and it's really not even just a service firm. I think your philosophies are transferable to any company in the country.
Every company, every sports franchise. Yeah, we here in San Antonio have the Spurs, and they're great. They're wonderful. They've had a wonderful history, and now they're, as our coach says, older than dirt. And so we're having to rejuvenate that. Any business and every business, I think that's absolutely true. Without which, not only bringing the young talent in, but then maximizing their effectiveness.
We're going to take a short sponsorship break. When we come back from the break, I wonder if we could ask you to share a current challenge facing your firm and the ideas that you've begun to implement or are considering implementing that will mitigate that challenge. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back, and stay tuned. We have some interesting messages coming from our sponsors.
There's something happening out there today. All across America, we're seeing encouraging signs of economic recovery. Businesses are once again thinking about new growth, and new opportunities are emerging. But it raises the question, is your company positioned to take full advantage of the economic recovery and the opportunities it presents? Maybe it's time to ask, how has the recession impacted your business model? Is your business as relevant as it once was? Should you consider entering new markets or expanding into new categories? And what do customers really value about their relationship with you? The golden thread through all these questions and the answer to each and every one of them can be found in just one place. Your brand. It's much deeper than your logo and much bigger than your advertising. Your brand is the enabler of your entire business strategy. Rikus Baird is a brand strategy firm that can help. They specialize in business branding. They've helped hundreds of companies from startups to Fortune 500 leverage their brands to drive growth. They can do the same for yours. It's really quite simple. Find out more, just visit brandingbusiness.com. That's www.brandingbusiness.com. And plant the seed for economic growth.
Welcome back to Critical Mass Coast to Coast. Before the break, we said we're going to ask you, Peter, if you would share a current challenge facing your firm. Would you be so kind?
Sure. I think one of the prime challenges is, of course, to be able to deliver our services and maximize our value in these trying economic times. The legal profession is no different than any other. And we exist for the benefit of the client, not the other way around. And I think sometimes there's a tendency to forget or minimize that, and that just cannot happen. And so as our clients, as our customers, if you will, have had to change and react to the business climate of the last several years, we, I think, have to do the same thing. We have to constantly ask, what is it that we can do better? How can we do it better? What are your needs, and how have those needs changed from what we've been used to, and how then can we adapt to those needs so that we provide value to you today and tomorrow, not just in the past? Within our firm itself in that regard, when the economy suffered originally in 2008, 2009, We have a budget, and we have been very scrupulous about that budget. And so we had to look at what is a budget that we feel comfortable with carrying. Our goal was not to lay off anybody, was to retain the people whom we had hired and whom we had mentored. This goes back to what you had mentioned earlier in the program. And so what budget can we sustain? And we picked a budget of approximately 4 or 5 years previously that we felt comfortable in living with at a time when we had fewer lawyers. And we were able to sustain that budget. We were able to get by without having to lay anybody off and keep the talent that we had accumulated. And what that did is set us up then for a strength which we wanted to not only continue but actually develop even more, so that we can be the strongest entity financially and professionally that we can in order to provide the best services to our clients, because obviously our competition is providing services as well. And we have to make sure that those services that we're providing provide the greatest value to the client. It doesn't necessarily mean money-making, because in this profession, business may be sued. We successfully are able to defend that. That business hasn't made any money, but they've avoided losing money, and sometimes significant money. So what is the greatest value that we can give our clients? What are the best services and at the most competitive price? And as a result, we have not only sought to strengthen ourselves financially and from a management standpoint, but that has also allowed us then to have the ability to upgrade our electronic systems, our computer systems, to do those things that one has to do to maintain and improve an ongoing business. And so it didn't strip out our ability to improve ourselves. And that's not only what we've had to deal with, but is something that we have to deal with every day, every year. Because as I told Peter, my experience has been that the greatest cancer, if you will, in my history, and I think with any business, is complacency. The idea that, okay, we've been successful, this works, we don't have to do anything else. I think that's a huge sin. And we try every day to do better and communicate that to our clients and ask that they do the same thing. We go to the clients all the time and periodically and ask them, what do you like? But as important or more so, what don't you like? What aren't we doing that we ought to be doing? And find out from them how we can improve.
It's an important point that needs to be restated, and that is even a professional practice at its foundation is a business. And sometimes service providers, unfortunately, can lose sight of that. And I agree with you, that's most commonly happens during the boom times, because you don't really have to maybe look as hard at some of the business elements of your practice because things are working and things are going well.
You get complacent, you get lazy, and then you're not set up for the next time there's a downfall. And so when the downfall hits and you're not prepared, it becomes calamitous. Because you're exactly right, you know, the old saying, the cobbler's children have no shoes. I think lawyers and doctors historically are notorious for being bad managers, but that's really a bad situation, because at the end of the day, we are a business, and we've had to make sure that we managed it accordingly so that we're strong enough in the downtimes to be able to sustain and improve ourselves. Because let's face it, our clients, when they're under stress economically, they require at least the same, if not a greater, level of service at the same, if not a lower price than before. And so if we don't have the ability to provide that, they certainly will find someone who does.
Yeah, in a professional practice where there are partners and shared ownership, it actually can make the challenge of making decisions even a higher hurdle because of the consensus that needs to be built among the partners who are, you know, have a say in how the outcome of the firm as well.
And that's right. And the other thing in doing that is we're having a partners meeting in Dallas next month, and one of the strategic planning agenda will be, do we expand, how so, by how much, whom should we look to at a time when perhaps a great talent in other competitors may be available. Now's the time to expand. Now's the time to perhaps acquire the talent that we may have sought in the past but couldn't get. Well, now we've positioned ourselves to be able to do that. So to strengthen not only the physical infrastructure, as I was saying, our technological capacities, but also what counts the most in this professional service business is our brain power, our ability to attract the finest people who have the ability to provide the greatest service. And also, but more importantly even too, to keep the folks that we have. It's no point in getting out good people outside the firm if we can't keep who we have. So keeping the people and the talent we have and acquiring additional talent as well as maintaining and maximizing, improving our own infrastructure.
These are all lessons to be learned by all practicing, you know, business leaders and professionals, and I appreciate you sharing them from the perspective of your law firm and your law practice, Peter. If someone would like to learn more about your firm, how do they find you online?
Sure, you bet. You would go on the web to jacksonwalker.com. We have a website, a comprehensive website that outlines exactly who we are, what we do, the services we provide. Each of the attorneys in the firm is featured with a biography, a picture, and a background. There's information about each of our locations, our pedigree, our history. So including information about our clients, where our clients have asked that we add that to the website. So there's certainly sufficient information, and I encourage each and every one of you to look on the website. Be happy to answer questions, or if you wish to email or call me to visit with you. But I certainly appreciated, Rick, the ability to the opportunity to talk to you this afternoon.
The pleasure's been mine as well. So thank you for taking the time, and welcome to our business community.
Thank you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is another installment of Critical Mass Coast to Coast, heard exclusively live on octalkradio.net. And so until the next time we have a chance to talk, this is Rick Franzi, host of the radio program, saying I hope that all your business decisions move your business in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass, Coast to Coast, only on octalkradio.net.